This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air, Linda Cohen along with you. Becoming a physician requires great dedication and often a kind of single-mindedness in order to achieve that goal. And along with the natural talents that bring many to a career in medicine, there often exists a wider variety of talents, some of which must be put on hold during that long training period. But these skills and interests can provide the physician with an incredible outlet for self-development and expression. Anne Botesh, Professor of Pediatrics and Associate Dean for Education at Upstate Medical University, has a clear perspective on this, and she's here along with Dr. Deirdre Nealon, the editor of Upstate's visual and literary journal, The Healing Muse, to share some of it with us. Welcome, Anne. Welcome, Deirdre.
Thanks, Linda.
Thanks so much for coming in today. So, Dr. Botesh, Anne Botesh, you are a writer as well, I guess.
I guess that's it's surprising for me to hear that. I never really thought of myself as a writer in that way.
Yeah, but tell us about it. I mean, did you have early experiences as a much younger person in school writing? Or
I did, actually, many years ago. I think I was in second grade. I won a book award, and I thought, I'm going to be a writer. And I think in high school, I had many teachers that really were very encouraging of me to go on and write. I actually saw one of them after I was in medical school, and I saw one of them in the mall in my hometown, and he wanted to know what I had written and what I had done in college.
And so you were being recognized very early
but
on.
But I disappointed him, and I told him I was in medical school.
Well, that's hardly a disappointment, but clearly, just as I said in the beginning, you know, you obviously have a myriad of talents and chose to focus on medicine for the majority of your efforts, but that strand of artistic expression clearly is working all the time in the way that you do your work and how you see things. Deirdre, what's been your experience? I mean, this is what you see all the time in compiling the Healing Muse, the visual and literary journal for Upstate. You really must see so much of this amongst healthcare professionals.
I'm very privileged that way, Linda, to get to see behind the mirror, so to speak, of physicians' internal lives as writers or photographers or painters. I mean, one of the best parts of the Healing Muse is meeting these people. And, for example, I've known of Anne for many, many years, and when her award-winning story came to us, everybody was so surprised when we found out that it was Anne, because I didn't know that she was a writer. And as she says, well, I'm a closet writer. And I think that there are many people in medicine, nursing, and physicians who do jot down these things. And as we'll hear in a little bit, it's extremely profound what they say.
So you alluded to the fact that this was an award-winning piece. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, as you know, Upstate is wonderfully supportive of the arts, and we run a contest every year for in-house people who work at Upstate Medical University, faculty, staff, employees, and students. And Anne's short story won this year for in fiction.
Wow.
So it's a big honor for her. I mean, we get great entries each year. And what's wonderful is every year there are new people that decide, I'm going to take a chance and see.
Yeah, that must be so exciting. And you've worked with a very special population. Clearly, I know you're a pediatrician and you do academic administration as well. You help in the medical school in that part of your role. But you also have an incredible history of having worked with abused children. Tell us a little bit about that.
I've been working in the field of child abuse probably for now 20 years, and I work with a lot of incredible people in the community and also within our hospital setting that I think have a lot of insight into how people think and what people do and some of the bad parts of society and how, you know, kids get hurt in these situations. And I think for me, I a lot of this has been very stressful, and I think that writing for me was a nice way to just think about it and put it, you know, in some form that I could, you know, see it and maybe deal with it a little bit better.
How about issues of confidentiality? I'm sure, you know, with all of the consciousness about HIPAA and all of the rules out there for not divulging personal information, does that affect or put a damper on your ability to be creative?
Yes and no. I think I thought about that a lot, especially with submitting this short story. I think that it actually gives you the freedom to be more creative. I thought about the stories that I've heard, and there are lots and lots of stories over the years, and it's a little bit easier to make it HIPAA compliant or confidential because I can just put things together or add to them or just, you know, make a few things up to make my point of, you know, how I feel about it a little bit stronger. But also I don't feel that I really voided anybody's confidentiality because this could be anybody.
Yeah, there's a universality to it. And what's interesting is that most writers, they say, write what you know. And clearly this is stuff that you know because of all this dedication, all these years of dedication. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Drs. Anne Botash and Deirdre Nealon, and we're talking about how creative outlets can help balance out a life in medicine. So I'm going to get right to the story you've brought to us today. I know you've excerpted, it's a little bit longer story, it's a short story, but you excerpted some paragraphs from it that you'd be willing to share with us, and I would love you to read it for us, and then maybe we'll have a little time to chat about it after.
Thank you. 2-year-old Henry swept from one end of the hallway to the other, leaving a backwash of broken toys, spilled carts, pieces of hospital clothing, and juice box drips. Despite his multiple bruises and head injury, he would not stay in his bed. For his 2-day stay, he enjoyed skidding and sliding in his slippers as fast as possible. I imagined his head popping against the floor or a table and shuddered with a jarring clonus as if my own child had fallen. He was like a puppy, pulling at the nurse's legs, jumping, and latching on with his arms. At first, there was no history of a fall. Later, Willie thought that maybe, just maybe, Henry had been jumping on the couch and may have tripped and fallen on the coffee table. When? Last week. Doesn't fit, I thought. Willie was the only one home with Henry for the past few days. He had been last seen without bruises by the maternal grandmother on the previous day. His mother had been home briefly during the day that the injuries likely happened, but it was not clear whether she noticed anything unusual. When they finally noticed the injuries, they waited a day to bring him to medical care. Willie was a large man with soft, pale features. Unbeknownst to him, the staff called him Whistling Willie, as he seemed to always have a repeating melody that he softly played through the space of his front teeth. A favorite was the theme from Casablanca. Although there were no words, the repetition of the background whistle of As Time Goes By won him his new title. His calloused hand clamped my hand, and he squeezed with a disarming and unfounded familiarity. 2 weeks later, they were all at the clinic. I tried not to wince as Willie grasped my hand too tightly again in a hearty handshake. Tears dropped from his bright eyes, and the puffiness around them seemed accentuated as he explained again that he did not know what happened to Henry. The investigation had gone nowhere, and Willie was still living with Tessa and Henry. I guessed that Child Protective Service workers were hoping that I would find something new at this visit. "I would hate to be you, Doc," he said. "What?" My response was a reflex. I should have just let him talk, but the words had escaped my thoughts. "You have to do this all the time. You have to see these bad things all the time," he offered as he coarsely swiped the wetness from his nose and face. I felt badly for considering him to be the perpetrator. His words reminded me that my words and thoughts, no matter what I said, were going to impact his life. My words, it's still the same old story. His words, a fight for love and glory, making sense of bad things. I wondered what had happened to him in his own past, but I did not ask. He went to the waiting room, and Henry ran to him and hugged his legs. Willie tried to walk, dragging little boy solidly on one ankle. He reached down and pulled him up to his face, kissing and embracing him so tightly that I worried about Henry's ribs. Heart, I thought. He's the heart. Heart's full of passion. I worried about Henry. If this were abuse, not an accident, he could be injured again, or worse. Yet I could not help wondering if I had made my statement less strong because of Willie. A few weeks later, the detective called me. Remembering a similar phone call about another little boy that was sent home only to be found dead the day before Christmas, I held my breath. That accident versus abuse themed scenario had not ended well, and our efforts to protect the child had failed. The detective words were short and measured.
He waited as I struggled to understand. Willie was found hanging in his trailer. There was not a note. The detective said, as far as he was concerned, note or no note, suicide is an admission of guilt. Or a broken heart, I thought. A case of do or die, as time goes by. I could hear the whistling before it stopped. As my hand replaced the phone, I thought of his hands again. He would not want to be me. My hand had written his note.
Wow. And that's only the smaller version of the story, Linda. Wow. It's very powerful.
Wow. That really is incredible.
Thank you.
Very powerful.
Thank you.
I thank you so much for bringing it to us. Well, what did it do for you to write a story of that kind? I mean, how did it perhaps allow you to process some of the things you do every day or see?
I actually started writing in earnest, I think, last year. And this story, as well as some others, really are about the feeling that you have when you have to make a decision about children and their families. Not necessarily that your decision is the final decision, but in your mind, you make a decision. And as Deirdre said, it's kind of the internal thoughts that go on. And to me, this was a way of making it real a little bit, too. I did feel really badly about a person who did commit suicide, and I wondered if he really had done it or hadn't done it. And there have been two or three alleged perpetrators over the last 20 years that have gone, you know, through this and have killed themselves. And it does make you wonder, you know, what happened here? Was it the process? Were they really guilty? You know, did they do something? Did they not do something? Was it just they were just, you know, unable to handle this? And so to kind of take that, you know, as a human and look at it and say, what happened to them? And what can I do to make this sort of make sense? And writing it helped me to do that. And it is a story. It's their story, but it's also the child's story, and it's my story. It's a lot of people's stories all in one.
Yeah, there really is a lot of universality. Did you ever feel, on some level, responsible for his committing suicide?
I don't think so. I think it's all, you know, human nature. And so I'm a witness in a lot of ways to the things that happen to people, to their children, to the families. And that's my job, to be a witness, to collect evidence. But at the same time, you know, you feel badly for people who are going through these things. And so this is a nice way of making it make sense.
It's almost cathartic.
Yes.
I want to thank you so much. Deirdre, where will we find this entire story?
In October, it will be in the New Healing Muse.
Wonderful. Well, I can't thank you enough for coming in and sharing it with us. My guests have been Dr. Ann Botash, professor of pediatrics, and Dr. Deirdre Nealon, editor of Upstate's visual and literary journal, The Healing Muse. I'm Linda Cohen, and you've been listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Fantastic.
The only thing was I didn't read the title.